And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things that impact our lives. Each of my guests will discuss his or her subject and relate it to current events. My next guest has conducted the most comprehensive data analysis ever on crime statistics and right-to-carry laws. His conclusions have drawn both lavish praise and heated criticism. We'll discuss his findings from his book, More Guns, Less Crime. John Lott is amazed how lucky he is to have had jobs where he could just sit and think about whatever he wanted to think about. John is an economics expert. He's the former chief economist for the United States Sentencing Commission. He's the author of 7 books, included the newly expanded edition of More Guns, Less Crime, as well as The Bias Against Guns, Why Almost Everything You've Heard About Gun Control is Wrong. He's number 18 among economics, law, and business researchers, and he is listed in the who's who's of economics. He's also a Fox News columnist. He received his PhD in economics from UCLA back in 1984. Joining us from the greater Philadelphia area. Hi, John. How are you today?
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being our guest. And it's so timely because after the Colorado shooting, Democrats in Congress and the Senate wasted absolutely no time in proposing new gun laws. Their legislation calls for proposed amendments to the cybersecurity bill to ban magazines holding more than 10 bullets. Others have proposed banning the sale of ammunition over the Internet. Even President Obama has chimed in, and he's prompted renewing the assault weapon ban. Now, you take a look at this. Why are more gun control laws and bans not the answer to the problems of these massacres?
Well, I wish it was as simple as just saying we ban guns and they'll keep criminals from going and getting hold of guns. The problem that you have to deal with when you deal with these different laws is to ask who's most likely to obey them. And when you pass a ban, it turns out that usually the most law-abiding good citizens who turn in their guns and not the criminals. And if you disarm law-abiding citizens relative to criminals rather than making places safer, you can actually make it easier for criminals to go and commit crimes. I suppose the easiest way to think about this is if, let's say you had a violent criminal stalking you or your family, would you feel safer putting a sign in front of your home that said, this home is a gun-free zone? Would that make it so that the criminal would think twice before bringing his weapon into the home? And my guess is most people wouldn't put up a sign like that. In fact, I don't think anybody would. And the reason is pretty clear, and that is all you're telling the criminal if you put a sign like that in front of your home is that he has less to worry about, that it would be relatively safer for him to attack you there than it would be for him to attack you someplace else. And the problem is that while nobody would put a sign like that in front of their home, we put up these types of signs in all sorts of places, such as the movie theater where this horrible tragedy occurred a couple weeks ago. And that is, if you look at all the multiple victim public shootings in the United States in which more than 3 people have been killed, with only one exception, all of these attacks have occurred where guns are banned. And I think rather than stopping these attacks, they've actually served as a magnet. And Americans have some familiarity with this, not just in terms of these public shootings. They also have it in terms of the D.C. or the Chicago gun bans. I think a lot of Americans are familiar with how murder rates and violent crime rates soared in those places after guns were banned. And, you know, it's not just true here. If you look around the world, there's not a place you can look at where guns have been banned and you can find murder rates falling.
Well, my guest is John Lott, and we're talking about his latest book, or his expanded book, More Guns, Less Crime. So, John, your basic thesis then is that more guns deter crime, and you cite the statistics. But how do you explain the vastly lower levels of both violent crime and gun ownership in Europe?
Well, first of all, not sure you'd want to take Europe as a whole. There's a lot of differences across Europe, but the point, you know, take something like the UK.
All right.
They have lower murder rates and lower gun ownership rates now, but they had even lower murder rates before they had any gun control law. Similarly with Germany. There are lots of different reasons that different places have the level of murder rates that they have, but before they had any gun control rules in 1920. Gun ownership was very common, very widespread in England, and yet you had incredibly few gun murders. London, a city of 8 million people in 1900, had a total of 2 gun murders in the entire city, had 5 armed robberies. And that was well before they had any gun control. And so you know, when you make these comparisons, you know, just looking across places can be a little bit misleading if they were even lower before they had any gun control. But, you know, you look at Switzerland. Switzerland has traditionally had one of the lowest murder rates in Europe, and yet they have a gun ownership rate that's about 20 percentage points higher than what we have here in the United States. The key thing to look at when you look at these countries is that you find Britain, its murder rate has gone up each time it's imposed more restrictive gun control laws. It hasn't gone down. There's not one time after they've imposed stricter gun control laws that their murder rate's gone down.
All right.
And I think that is probably more telling.
That is very very informative, very instructive. So my guest is John Lott. John, then let's talk about what's going on here in the United States after the Aurora shooting. There's these calls for more bans on guns, more regulation on guns and ammo and so forth. But if you take a look at all of these proposals, I mean, aren't these laws and regulations really violations of the Second Amendment to the Constitution?
Well, I don't really argue things based on the Second Amendment. I'm an empirical guy. I deal with numbers. And to me, the bottom line question is what makes us safer or not. I mean, other people can go and debate the Second Amendment issues that are there. But, you know, I think, you know, as far as safety goes, there's been a lot of research that's been done on the assault weapons ban that we had from 1994 to 2004. And I don't know of any published academic research in criminology or economics journals that's shown that the assault weapons ban lowered murder rates. And I think, you know, it's pretty clear why that's the case. You know, banning guns based upon how they look rather than how they operate never really made a lot of sense to me. But you know, you take the president's statement at the beginning of the week where he said AK-47s should only be held by soldiers, not civilians. I know Obama. We both taught at the University of Chicago Law School for a while, and I know that he knows his statement was just flat-out wrong because the major problem was in real life, we're talking about civilian versions of the AK-47 that Americans would have. These civilian versions are essentially semi-automatic rifles. You know, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. They're not machine guns. They're not the types of weapons that actually militaries around the world have. In fact, I don't think any military around the world would have these types of civilian version of these guns. And, you know, to go and just imply or claim explicitly that these AK-47s are military versions of these guns, I just think is wrong to scare or terrify people unjustifiably in that way.
No.
And but to go and ban guns just because they look a certain way on the outside, even though they function the same as any rifle. Look, if he wants to go and ban all semi-automatic rifles, then that's what we should talk about. But just picking up a subset of semi-automatic rifles just because cosmetically, on the outside, they look like an AK-47. Just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
That makes sense. My guest is John Lott. He is the author of More Guns, Less Crime. We're talking about, among other things, the shooting in Aurora. And I'm glad that you brought up President Obama's sensational comments. I think it's an ironic twist of fate that President Obama, who's on record as being opposed to guns, may, in fact, be the best president in U.S. history when it comes to gun ownership. And here are just some statistics I'll throw out. I know you're familiar with them. This is for the listeners. Gun sales have increased more in his 3.5 years in office than under any other previous president. Gun sales are up 48% since President Obama took office. More guns were sold in December 2011 than any other month on record. Gun permits and applications and background checks are at an all-time high. And just coincidentally, or by the way, only about 1.3% of all background checks result in the denial of a weapon. The share price in Smith of Smith & Wesson, which is a reasonable proxy for the gun industry, is up 71.5% during the Obama administration. Ruger, another gun manufacturer's share price, is up an astounding 510% during that same period. NRA, the National Rifle Association membership, has increased during President Obama's term, and the government, the federal government, has collected billions more in federal and state taxes related to guns and ammo. So over and during that same period, overall gun-related homicides and robberies were actually down. So I guess my question to you is, looking at all of these statistics, it doesn't sound like President Obama is very anti-gun, despite the rhetoric. And my question to you, it's a provocative question, should the NRA support President Obama for re-election based on all of these statistics?
Well, the reason why gun sales are up is because of concerns about Obama's views on guns. It's not like he's gone and passed any rules or anything that makes it easier for people to own guns. So, you know, you look at who he's appointed to the Supreme Court. The two people he's appointed to the Supreme Court don't believe that there's an individual right to self-defense, let alone an individual right to own guns. He's appointed lots of judges to lower courts who have similar views. You know, he's gone and banned the importation of semi-automatic rifles of many types. He's putting through rules that will ban the importation of many types of shotguns. You know, he's done lots of things, and he's talked about doing other things behind the scenes. And one can go down a list. He's imposed, without an act of Congress, imposed new reporting requirements for gun sellers. You have the Fast and Furious scandal where CBS News has unearthed emails that indicated that they were pushing this program in order to try to gin up support for other types of gun control regulations. This is a program where they actually ordered gun dealers to make sales to criminals that the gun dealers did not want to make, but the Obama administration Justice Department ordered them to make the sales. And, you know, you've had well over a couple hundred people in Mexico killed with those guns and at least one person in the United States killed with them. And so, you know, there's a lot of issues there. I don't think anybody who supports gun ownership is going to be happy with the Obama administration. And he, a little while ago, as reported in the Washington Post, told the former head of a gun control group, the Brady Campaign, that he was working behind the scenes to push more gun control, and that if he won a second term, he'd be a lot freer to go and actively fight for these things. So I think it's those types of concerns. And I knew Obama, as I may have mentioned before. Both he and I taught at the University of Chicago Law School. We overlapped there for 4 years. And the first conversation that I had with Obama was I went up, introduced myself. He said, "Oh, you're the gun guy," and I said, "Yeah, I guess so." And he said, "I don't believe people should be able to own guns." And I had heard that he had been helping out with the city of Chicago suit against the gun makers and doing some other things. So I said, "Well, you know, maybe we can get together and have lunch sometime." And he just kind of wrinkled his nose and just turned around and walked away and didn't say anything. And that was the end of our first conversation. So, you know, it's all the times I ran into him, I mean, you know, he wouldn't shake hands or do other things. It was the type of person who I think, because of my views on guns, really viewed me as evil and wasn't going to have anything to do with me. It's just very unusual for an academic environment. I mean, lots of people would disagree, but they would at least talk about things. And he was not the type of person who was willing to talk to people that he disagreed with, at least on the gun issue.
Wow.
And so I don't think anybody's going to view Obama as being sympathetic to gun ownership. And my guess is, based upon what the Washington Post reported, as I mentioned earlier, that if he gets a second term, he's going to feel a lot less constrained in terms of how he's going to deal with the issue.
My guest is John Lott, author of the book More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws. fascinating insight into President Obama, John. I want to return back, if we can, to your book for just a moment and take a look at some of the theses in there. That one is, of course, more guns means less crime. But how do you address the 2004 Harvard study that showed in the U.S., where more guns are available, both men and women are at higher risk for homicide, particularly firearm homicide? Handgun violence in the United States, if there are more guns out there, doesn't it just the matter of the law of big numbers mean that there are going to be more gun-related deaths, more gun-related violence?
Right. Well, there are a couple things with that. First of all, when they talk about gun-related homicides, they're including suicides in there. They also, the couple years that they picked to compare were kind of arbitrary. There are lots of problems with this. They don't control for any law enforcement or anything else that's there. And I could get into more detail, but there are kind of errors in their statistical tests. It's not really what one would call kind of... It's the type of data set you could put together in about 2 hours in the afternoon, and it's not clear why you pick 2 years. How do you pick 2 years that you're going to make a comparison with? You know, you got lots and lots of years of data. Most deaths with guns are related to suicides. And the problem that you have there is you have a lot of suicides in rural areas. Is it because gun ownership's high in rural areas, or is it because of other things? And there's a lot of research that's been done that indicates that there are these other factors. So, for example, the male-female ratio is a lot different in more rural areas. You have a lot more men relative to women. Issues of loneliness, isolation, things like that that can be related to depression and suicide. And, this study doesn't try to address or deal with any of those types of issues or concerns.
All right. But, John, let me push on, if I can, for just a moment here. But, again, basic thesis is by having more guns, by asking citizens to use guns, aren't you encouraging vigilantism and flouting the rule of law?
No, I don't think so. I have a piece in today's Wall Street Journal where I go through the survey data of police officers and their views of civilian owning guns. And the vast majority of police support individuals being able to own guns. And the reason why they do is police are, in my research, the single most important factor for reducing crime. But one of the things that the police themselves understand is that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's already been committed. And the question that you face is, what do you advise people to do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves? And simply telling them to behave passively isn't very good advice. This isn't vigilantism when somebody's using a gun to protect themselves, protect somebody else. It's a question of just self-defense. And, if you were to take a concealed carry permit class, one of the things that you'll be told, and I think is important advice, is that you're not the police. Your job isn't to go out and physically tackle or constrain somebody. The benefit of having a gun is to maximize the distance between yourself and attacker. Police face a much more difficult job than civilians do. A police officer can't just be satisfied with brandishing his gun and watching the criminal run away. He has to be willing to come into physical contact with the criminal. And that's when things really get dangerous, because a lot of things can go wrong when you're having to get into physical contact. Fortunately, civilians don't have to do that type of job. But a gun is still beneficial for them. And the other thing is how rarely civilians, when they do use guns defensively, have to fire them, precisely because all they have to do is try to use a gun to maximize the distance between themselves and the criminal. Fewer than 1 out of every 1,000 times that people use a gun defensively is the attacker killed. And while woundings are maybe about 7 or 8 times more frequent than killing of criminals, it's still something that's just a tiny, tiny fraction of 1 percentage point. And, I think vigilantism isn't what's being talked about here.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been John Lott, author of the book More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws. John, you've probably piqued the interest of lots of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, I have a website, johnrlott.com, but the book, you can actually get an e-book version of it for about $5 from Amazon, so people can get a pretty good idea of what's in it through that.
That is great. John, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.